When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. And today I'm taking a dip into some deep, soft, wet underbelly lore. You hit me up. You said, do you want to interview the devil?
You know why I said that, though, yeah?
Because you've been smeared in the press as the devil.
So, Mark, well, first of all, I got canceled, as many people probably know. And I was in total shock of what had happened online. And then I asked Mark, because I'm like, I'm not a very big influencer or anything on the internet. So I asked Mark, I'm like, do you know anyone that would give me a voice in the situation? And I looked up Mark interviews and I saw that you interviewed him.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him to connect me to you. And so Mark reaches out to you and says, hey, do you, Lima's interested in doing a podcast with you or an interview with you? And then I guess your response was, I know Lima, the devil reincarnated. And then he calls me.
You think
and he's like,
I said that?
Yeah, that's what Mark said. So then he tells me, he's like, well,
Did I really say that?
Yeah, you responded to him in a text
message.
Why
would I say that? That doesn't sound like something I would say.
Well, that's what people were calling me on the internet.
Let me look at my text.
Okay. So then Mark tells me, he's like, well, Adam called you the devil. Doesn't look like he's interested in doing a podcast with you.
Oh, I fuck with the devil. This is well known.
But then he was like, but at least he knows who you are.
I can't find
Mark's number. So then I emailed, I drove Ivan, my husband, crazy for like a good 2 days. I'm like, I can't believe Adam, who, no shade, is a porn star, is worried about me smearing his reputation. And so then I sent you that email and I said, hey, do you want to interview the devil?
This is my response to Mark. I said, ha, 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 ha. I saw the video saying she's the devil incarnate. So I did not say, oh, she is the devil, which that was the part I was like surprised by. But when he said this, I had just watched the video basically saying you're the devil, which, I hate to do a spoiler at the beginning of this.
Okay.
I watched the video. I watched part one and part two.
Okay.
I don't think that they are meant to be. I don't think that they're coming from a place of serious inquiry. Like the cancellation of you. I didn't feel like I heard a lot of strong arguments that you were a bad person or that you were doing diabolical things.
Did you see the video that went up on Mark's channel today?
No.
99% like negative
they hate
feedback
you.
on Mark's video.
Oh.
Yeah.
What did Mark say? Well, what was Mark's video that came out today? I feel like I should have known about this.
Mark called me. He's like, Lima, don't read the comments. I'm like, Mark, I already did. And he told me, he's like, don't. What is wrong with people? Like,
so what do they think that you did?
So a long list of things. They think I'm Illuminati. They think I'm MK Ultra. They think that I own rehabs and do.
Are you saying those two up front because they're the most obviously ridiculous? Like, or is that like a large percentage of these people actually think those?
A large percentage of people actually appear to think that.
So this is like a large percentage of the software underbelly audience thinks that because they do the Illuminati thing about me too.
Yeah.
It's just.
Well, that's
bizarre.
Why you interviewed me, because we're both Illuminati.
That does kind of add up.
Yeah. Just kidding.
But okay, what else?
But okay,
are there more like serious type accusations?
Yeah. So the biggest one is, and I think it's better if I put out the entire story firsthand. But the biggest one is saying
that. Some people might not know what we're talking
about. Yeah, the biggest one is saying I lied about a woman's autopsy report, and why would I possibly lie? It's because I killed her, obviously.
So
that's basically their idea of what.
Right.
And, I didn't lie about it.
Because you said
story.
That there was only Tylenol in her system, and then that part got edited out of the interview. That was like one thing that I managed to catch from some of the exposed videos about you that actually sounded like it was interesting. Is that not true?
Okay. So when should we start from the beginning? Because
I think
everybody's going to be totally lost.
This is true.
If they don't know what exactly happened.
Yeah. Okay. So you. Okay. What's your background even before you met Amanda?
Okay. So growing up, my father was very abusive to my sisters and I, and you know. I never talk about this stuff. It makes me very uncomfortable, but I feel like a lot of people online treat me like I'm just a robot. So they use me as a punching bag in their comments. So I think it's important to just kind of be human and share like the experiences. But basically, like, you know, my father was physically and sexually abusive with my sisters and I. And, he would, if we woke up early, he would duct tape us to chairs and...
That's terrible. I'm sorry to hear
duct tape our mouth shut. And, like, growing up, I always was thinking, like, how are we going to get away from this situation? Or, you know, and I always had really long hair and people would always comment, like, oh, your hair's so pretty. So I'd be thinking, like, you know, I want to hurt my dad and I want to get away from our... I want to get my mom and sisters away from this situation.
Right.
And then I'd be too scared to do it because I was like 5 years old. And I'd go to my room and like cut a piece of my hair off and cry about it, you know. And so my mom ended up running away when I was five and my sisters were three. And we ended up living in a church in Detroit. And then we moved to Canada. And she contracted a lot. She's a software developer, so... I went to 15 elementary schools and 8 different high schools, and we moved around a lot. I didn't really have, like, any close friends, so, sorry. My sisters were, like, my best friends. And so, fast forward, like, to now, like, I went through all the standard things, like, you know, hanging out with the wrong kids at school, just getting in trouble, watching my friends fall apart. And then I kind of decided I was going to change my life. And that's what got me interested in mental health. But on the other end, my sisters didn't remember any of the trauma. They were straight A students. They were all-star athletes. They didn't get into trouble. They graduated university and went on moved to LA to be actresses. They were very successful as actresses. You know, a lot of people in LA are actresses, but they're driving for Uber, they're waitressing or whatever. Right. They were actually supporting themselves full time. And they were doing really well. And then around 9 years ago, they started hearing voices and they went to see a psychiatrist. And that doctor didn't have any tools to diagnose or treat them. They just said, how are you feeling? And based on my sister's description of their feelings, basically like a blind person trying to describe the color blue, you're trying to describe a feeling you've never felt before. Based off of their self-reporting, the psychiatrist diagnosed my sisters, both of them, as schizophrenic, gave them a cocktail of medications, and my sisters developed an addiction to the medications. They were misdiagnosed. 4 years later, we found out that they had dissociative identity disorder, which is multiple personality disorder.
Right.
It can't be treated with medications. It needs to be treated with specialized therapy. And because of the addiction, we're unable to treat the mental illness. And the price of treatment is so expensive because insurance, you know, doesn't really rely on self-reporting. They'll kind of go with a one-size-fits-all treatment, so they'll only approve like 3 days for a mental health hold, or if it's an addiction, up to 30 days of treatment, and then they release a person. And a lot of times, these people have been self-harming, eating disorders, you know, addiction for 15 years or more, and 30 days in rehab is not enough time to fix a person's behaviors for 15 years.
Right.
So, yeah, that basically fueled me to start my startup company, which is Aura.
Uh-huh.
And what we do is essentially use data, so self-reporting, but also other aspects, like we do voice analysis, we do biofeedback, we analyze the patient's behavior and interactions. It's a telehealth app that engages with the patient, kind of tracks how they're doing. And the goal is essentially to extend patients' treatment with insurance paying for it.
Where'd you get the funding to start this business?
I raised money from, I raised a pre-seed round to start the company.
Okay.
From investors.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, okay. And so then how do you get in touch with Mark? Or is there anything significant in between that we should cover?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, okay. I started the company in 2019, but before that, I've been doing this since 2014. I had the idea, but I didn't really know anything about business except for the Shark Tank, watching Shark Tank in Canada.
Right.
So in my world, I have a great idea.
Wait,
so
you grew up in Canada? Did we not even touch on exactly where you grew up?
I grew up all over, Toronto, and then Ottawa, and then Montreal, and then LA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So all over the place. But essentially, I can't remember what your previous question was.
The business, you started it in 2019.
Yeah, I started it, but I had an idea. I really didn't know anything about business. And then I would watch Shark Tank all the time in Canada. And there was an event in LA that was a panel of investors, and you go pitch them. And it was $80 for the ticket. And for me, I was like, oh my God, $80 is so cheap for someone to write me a big check to start my business.
Right.
And because I thought you just have to have a good idea and then someone's going to write a check and help you build it.
Right.
And so I paid for my ticket, went to the event, pitched my idea. Everyone was like, that's so amazing. That's so great. And I was so excited. And then there was this one guy, Tyler, and one of the investors. And I asked him, I'm like, Tyler, what did you think of my, pitch? Because you only have 60 seconds. You pay $80, but you only get 60 seconds to pitch them.
Uh-huh.
And then he looked at me and he was like, what do you do? And I'm like, well, first you have to log in. And then he was like, no, what do you do? And I told him, I was like, well, first you have to create a username and password. And he's like, how do you make money? What's your business model? And I looked at him and I was like, oh, we're a nonprofit. I don't want to make money. I just want to make the world a better place. And he looked at me and he was like, nobody here is going to fund you. And I just thought he was like the meanest person in the world.
Uh-huh.
And he gave me his business card and he said, email me your business plan and I'll take a look at it, but no one here is going to fund you. And I remember looking at him and saying, well, Tyler, I don't care because tomorrow I'm going to start a Kickstarter. And he looked at me and he's like, that's not how Kickstarter works. And fast forward, all of the other investors that thought I was so amazing, obviously that went nowhere because everyone was just telling me I was great so that they could be like, let's take a lunch meeting, let's do a dinner meeting. And
right.
They went nowhere. And because I paid $80 to pitch, I had emailed Tyler my business plan because I'm like, I paid for this, so I might as well get his feedback.
Right.
But I went and took these meetings with these other investors, and they just led nowhere. I ended up taking a meeting in Hollywood with this guy in his office, and I just remember he had made me like a video. And it was like, people, helping people, help people. And I thought it was the stupidest video. And he's like, I'm going to invest in this. It's going to be so great and this and that. And his office was at the very top floor of this building. And it was all glass. And so all of his employees were leaving. And then, and this was like around 5 o'clock. And then it got later into 6, 7. And I remember just like him working with me and then standing up and like whipping it out in my face. Like, I'm going to fund your business.
Wow.
So, pay up. And that was like the last investor meeting I took.
I know that none of you guys watch porn, but just in case you have some friends that do, you're going to want to hear me out on this one. With everything going on in the world, governments have increased their surveillance. They're using your devices to track your location, your movements, and in some countries, even your internet activity. You don't want to be caught literally with your pants down, and one of the best ways to protect yourself is with ExpressVPN.
When you use ExpressVPN, your internet connection is rerouted through a secure, encrypted server so you can surf the web anonymously without anyone looking over your shoulder. I know you think that all you have to do is use incognito mode and everybody won't be able to tell that you've been lurking on Plug Talk at work, but you're wrong. Even when you use incognito mode, your internet provider like Verizon or AT&T can see every single website that you visit. And if you live on campus or use a shared Wi-Fi, your network administrator can too. That's why I use ExpressVPN whenever I go online, and I recommend that you do the same. Without ExpressVPN, you're giving people a free license to peek over your shoulder and see all the freaky shit that you're looking at. So protect your privacy today and get 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Visit expressvpn.com/nojump. That's expressvpn.com/nojump for 3 months free with a 1 year package. Visit expressvpn.com/nojump to learn more. Thank you.
What'd you do?
I froze. I was in total shock and I kind of played it off like, I wasn't upset because I was scared of what he would do, and I just tried to get out of the building, and he did like grab me and he was very aggressive, but aside from that, nothing happened. Like, he touched himself and he touched my face, and I like kind of pushed him off, like laughing and joking around, like,
wow,
not a big deal. But
that sucks. That's, yeah, at least you got out of there.
Yeah. And so that was kind of my wake up moment of, oh, when people tell you that you're great and you're smart doesn't necessarily mean. So my thought of, oh, Tyler's an asshole for telling me I'm unfundable, turned out like Tyler was right. And, so he had emailed me back my business plan, and it was all highlighted in red and all these notes. And, so I took a year where I didn't meet with anybody all of 2015. And I started working. I took Wharton Business School, put their business courses on Coursera for free.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a bunch of their business classes, and I worked on the feedback that Tyler had given me. And then a year later, I emailed him on the anniversary of the day we met, and he told me I wasn't, you know, fundable. Mm-hmm. And I said, happy anniversary, Tyler. Not sure if you remember me, but... you know, here's my revised business plan. So it was a year later that I had sent it back to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he booked a meeting with me in San Diego, and I went out to see him. And after that, like, he started working with me on like mentoring me and guiding me for what next. So he's like, okay, well, now that you have your business plan, you have to answer two questions. Can you build it? Number one, and does anybody care? And if you can answer these questions, then you can get funding. And so... I didn't know how to code. I didn't know how to program. So I started, I had a background in virtual reality. I was working for a friend's company, and, I started joining hackathons and learning how to code on YouTube.
And this was all with the idea being that it would help with this business that you were building that was essentially about helping people who are addicted to drugs.
Yes. Yeah. So I wanted to do that. I had the idea in 2013, but I wasn't active in it. It was just an idea that I wanted to do. And it wasn't 2013. It was not virtual reality. In 2013, what I was trying to build was a learning management platform. So it's like video calls online, kind of like what people do now. But right. It was also like what you see for online courses, but for therapy. So you get like assignments and stuff. And then very early on, a friend put a VR headset on me, and, you know, I was so impressed, and I didn't see entertainment or gaming. I saw planting a memory in someone's mind and being able to enact something without the consequences.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to scale that in mental health. And then the more research that I had done, I started following professors that were doing this for a long time, and I ended up connecting with them and going to the universities to meet with them, and that became my passion. But
so I'm like a fentanyl addict, and I can just do fentanyl in virtual reality, and that'll kind of like soothe the desire to do fentanyl.
No.
Right, that sounds kind of counterintuitive, right? Like, so what is the idea though?
Okay, so that's exposure therapy. What we do is, number one, I don't treat anybody. That's another thing that I'm canceled for. I don't do therapy on anyone. I build the tools, and then the therapist, clinical psychiatrist, use them with patients. And so a lot of our tools are mindfulness-based, so you don't necessarily need a therapist there with you.
Right.
Which is like guided meditations, guided coping strategies. But then when it comes to exposure therapy, what you're talking about, you need a therapist in the room. And so the way that that would be is you wouldn't just be thrown into, you know, a virtual crack house or anything like that. And then right. you've got fentanyl in front of you. What we do is the therapist does the work with you initially. And then at a point when you're ready, they'll start to do mindfulness practice. Like they'll put you on a beach. And then so you wear a belt around your right under your chest. It measures your heart rate. And we also do the voice analysis. And so while you're engaging with a therapist in this environment, he or she will ask you, Adam, is it okay? So they'll see that you're doing well while you're talking about this issue, or you're doing poorly while you're talking about this issue. And so if you're not doing well, they're going to keep you in an environment that's calming. If you are doing well and you're talking about, you know, these things, then they'll say, Adam, is it okay if I put you in, you know, like an environment that, like, for example, at home by yourself. So we'll put you at home by yourself, like in a living room environment. There's no one else there. The therapist will go quiet. They'll measure how you're feeling, ask you to describe how you're feeling. And a lot of times people will be like, I feel fine. Like everything's good. But you can see on your wrist and the therapist can see on the computer that you're not okay. So your distress levels are elevated. And so you're able to kind of gamify the therapy and see that a lot of people think like talk therapy doesn't work. It doesn't work for me. I just need medications. Well, if you can see stress and you can see calm and your therapist can say, Adam, remember what we talked about? Drop your shoulders. You're breathing from your, you know, you're breathing from your chest, breathe from your belly, and then see how long it takes you to calm yourself down until they need to like step back in again. And so now you can actually measure a therapy session, not just based off of what you're saying. And if you're doing well in the environment, then the therapist will say, is it okay if I put your drug of choice in front of you? Mm-hmm. If you say no, they're not going to do it. If you say yes, then so they can escalate. And we also do this with veterans. So something that, because I didn't design the scenes. We went off of what the therapist told us they wanted to do because they already do these therapies where they have them like imagine these scenarios.
Uh-huh.
But now we can bring it to life. So, for example, 4th of July or New Year's Eve, a lot of veterans end up relapsing because of fireworks.
Right.
And so.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either until, you know, I started this. So basically with this, you can put them at home by themselves, like in an environment. So we've got, you know, places that are nicer, but we've got places that are not as nice. And so you can choose the environment, you could put them in, and then you could set fireworks off and you could put their drug of choice in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that has shockingly been very effective is bathrooms. We have bathroom stalls. We've got dirty bathrooms. We've got clean bathrooms. We've got home bathrooms. You would not believe like how triggering bathrooms are for people.
Mm.
And I guess it's because they cut themselves in the bathroom. They throw up in the bathroom. They'll do a line in the bathroom. So
the gist of it is that basically if you're trying to stop being addicted to something, that it's like going out into the real world is very challenging because you're just going to be exposed to all this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're an alcoholic and it's hard for you to be around alcohol, like at some point you're just going to walk by a liquor store and that exactly. could be really hard. So you try to like build yeah. up their tolerance level.
That yeah. And sense. You want to measure it. So I don't want to just go based off of how are you feeling? I'm fine. Well, right. now I can actually measure it. And that's the biggest problem with insurance companies, right? These are the things that I get attacked for. Why are you working to make insurance pay for treatment? Why shouldn't you be working to make treatment cheaper? Well, there are facilities where you know, there are facilities that cost like $55,000 a month, and then there are facilities that cost $20,000 a month. And it's like, when you look at the levels of care, you have 200 people packed into a place, not enough therapists. Nobody gets one-on-one therapy. It's all group therapy. You're decreasing the quality of care. And the type of work that it takes these people to go in and deal with suicidal people, deal with really aggressive people, deal with people's trauma. Like, you get very emotionally attached to people when they're sharing like such personal, sad stories with you, and you really want to help them. Like, you take that home with you, whether you like it or not. You're going to get attached to those people. Mm-hmm. You want them to succeed. So it's a very hard job. And I'm definitely anti-lowering the cost of treatment. Because, and the other reason is, like, if you go in, like, let's say you need a kidney transplant, that's going to cost around $400,000. You're not going to pay for that. Insurance will pay for it. If cancer treatment costs on an average of $150,000, insurance pays for it. Mm-hmm. A heart transplant costs about $1.5 million. Insurance pays for it. But insurance will not pay for mental health or addiction for more than 30 days because there's no concrete anything besides Adam says he feels like he needs more time.
Right.
Well, why am I paying $45,000 a month? And then on top of that, after 30 days of treatment, the relapse rate for alcohol and opioid addiction is 90%. Mm. So after I spend an average of $45,000 on Adam's treatment, there's a 90% chance he's going to relapse. So if Adam's saying, I need more time, your success rates are so low, they're 10%. Why am I going to give Adam more time? But if we can say, when Adam first came to our facility, he was a 9 out of 10 risk level to relapse. And on day 15, he was, you know, a 7 out of 10. And on day, 28, he was a 6 out of 10. But if you extend another 30 days, then we can decrease that even more. And then more so, you can get information like Adam's able to get himself down in stressful environments from a level 8 to a level 7 on his own, but he needs the assistance of a therapist still to get to a level 5, you know?
Okay.
So you can actually use science.
Right. So this exactly. these are the goals with the business.
It's just progress tracking. It's right. Measuring. And so we also have an application, an app. And that app is a telehealth app. So when you go home, you can do video calls with your therapist. But it's not just a video call platform because it takes what we do in virtual reality and smushes it into your phone. And the reason for that is, like, video calls are great for physical health. If I have a stomach pain in the morning, I'm doing my telehealth session. I'm going to tell my doctor, these are my symptoms of how my stomach's hurting. At night, I'm going to have the same symptoms. For someone with mental health struggles, they're going to wake up in the morning and say, I feel really great. I'm really excited. I think today's going to be, you know, a better day for me. And then by evening, they could just want to end it all.
Right.
So it's really important to constantly give them that support. And so
the freaks come out at night.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I used to get fucked up.
Yeah.
Nighttime.
Yeah.
That's when you get fucked up.
Yeah. And so I think the most important aspect of that is you really want to track the progression or regression of the patient. And so essentially we're trying to treat mental health like physical health.
Mm.
And I can tell you all of the people that are attacking me right now have not read the petition, because from day one, I've outlined all of my goals in a petition on change.org. And that petition doesn't mean that you have to use my company's technology. I'm trying to pave a path where others will essentially use technology the way that I'm using it. Just like we use diagnostic tools and stuff like that in physical health, why don't we do that with mental health?
Right.
So
you got, so now we're okay to talk, you get to Mark basically because you saw him as basically having a platform that speaks about mental health to a lot of people, so it might be a good fit.
Yeah. I've been trying to build this business. So I, this guy tells me, can you build it? Does anybody care? And so I'm like learning how to code. I build a really hideous version of what I'm trying to build. I take it to a clinic. The clinic actually likes it because it functions. So then they give me money to start building, you know, to hire people to help me. So now I hire a little tiny group of coders. And then where, you know, they're building it for me. And I'm having like ups and downs with the company because I still need a business model. Who's going to care enough to? And at the time, it was only virtual reality because that's what I specialized in. And I had dreams of building the telehealth aspect, but virtual reality was not covered by insurance and telehealth was not covered by insurance. So I was trying to pave the way for something new, and investors just want to see a return on their investment. So if you don't have a way to make money off of the product, then they won't, you know, they won't really move forward and put money down.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Shark yeah. Tank, you don't see a lot of nonprofits, right?
No, no, no. That yeah. was when I was totally oblivious. Completely, right? Okay, right? Yeah. I just thought, oh, I have a great idea. Someone's going to write a check for me and partner up with me and teach me how to do it. And
right.
that's absolutely not how startups work at all. I learned that. But yeah, so I build the platform. I start the company, shut it down. Originally, I decided to... originally, my first company was called The Last Star.
Mm-hmm.
And my focus was on treatment... rather than punishment. And so when I was trying to do the does anybody care factor, I would go to courthouses and I would sit and wait to talk to a judge because I didn't know how to talk to a judge. And none of the judges would talk to me. And I'd have like all of these like surveys or something just so I could say, like, would a judge be willing to sentence someone to treatment using my progress tracking? Like, you can track them with the parole officer and all of that to see that they're doing like their mental health assignments and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that a judge would even care about? So it was really focused on treatment over punishment. And then I couldn't get a judge to talk to me. I couldn't get into the corrections side of things. I just, no one would have a conversation with me. And so then that obviously I shut down, and then I started up again. But I was getting a lot of I was telling my husband, I'm like, no one's taking me seriously. So he told me, he's like, put everything you know on Instagram. So I started posting stuff on Instagram, not my pictures, but just doing reviews of technology. And people thought I was a guy, and they'd be like, hey, man, you know, what do you think about this camera or that camera? And so I was getting a lot of traction on Instagram. So I got invited to speak at a panel. At a conference, somebody reached out to me on Instagram. They're like, hey, would you be interested in coming to our conference speaking about cameras and technology? And so I went. They wanted me to talk about virtual reality. And that panel opened up doors for me where people wanted me to talk more about what virtual reality could be used for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started speaking at conferences and essentially planting the seeds for mental health. But then I had a couple, I had a lot of access. I was working for a friend's company that was filming 360 experiences for really big productions and sports teams. And so I started Telesport Me. I was really proud of the name, but it was training in virtual reality. And so that got a little bit of traction. And then I had an investor that was willing to write a check for that. And when it finally came down to taking money for it, I was like, if I accept this investor's money for Telesport Me, then I'm going to be stuck doing virtual reality in sports. And that's not what my passion is.
Mm.
So I shut down Telesport Me, and essentially I ended up starting Aura. And that was in 2019. So I had like a lot. And throughout the years, I've had a lot of mentors. When I would pitch somebody and, they would tell me like no to writing me a check to invest in the company. No would just be the beginning of the conversation. I'd say, okay, well, why no? And then they would tell me, well, because of this and this and this. And then I'd go fix all those things and come back. It'd be like, well, still no, because of this and this. And I'd go work on it. And so 2019, I got to a place where I had a strong business model. I had a strong product. Had interest. I was able to say that I could show that I could build it because I had a platform. And does anyone care? I had treatment centers that were lined up to start, you know, using the product. I ended up raising a little bit of money through a pre-seed round, so mm-hmm. smaller investors. And that allowed me to hire a team, build out the platform, and we were giving the product to treatment centers for free, not charging them, in exchange for the clinical teams to co-develop with us.
Right.
And so this is 2019. So we're giving everything away for free throughout 2019 in the hopes that we'll eventually be able to charge, so that while I'm burning through all the cash from the investors to make payroll for my team, that I'm going to be billing these facilities down the line, right? March 2020, I'm supposed to start, in our agreements, billing these facilities, 19 uh-huh. treatment centers that are signed up. And COVID hits. And all the shutdowns happen, and I get these calls from the facilities saying they're not comfortable using virtual reality because they don't want to put the headset on somebody's face, wipe it down, and then put it on somebody else's face. And so nobody wanted to do virtual reality at that time with COVID, because everyone was like super strict with like social distancing. There's a company called CleanBox where you could put the headset inside of this box and it'll like sanitize it. And we offered to buy all of the facilities the clean boxes, and they all refused. And so essentially, it did open up a lot of doors with telehealth. So all of a sudden, video calls with therapists and medical professionals were now reimbursable by insurance. And so I ended up burning through the rest of the money that I had to build our telehealth platform. So you could do the voice analysis, the biofeedback, the behavioral analysis, and all of that in the application instead of in a VR headset. Uh-huh. So now you have patients using their own phones instead of putting something on their faces. So that like burned through all the cash, but my contracts originally were for virtual reality. And I was like, now I have a product. I have investors that supported me. I have no, like, I'm about to run out of funding and nobody cares about what I'm doing. No one will take a meeting with me. COVID investors are terrified to like put their money anywhere because the market was so crazy. So I was like, how do I get people to care about me? How do I get people to care about my mission and what I'm doing? So I reach out to Mark and I tell him what I do. We get, we have lunch in LA. So I flew into LA for something work related. Mark and I connected. We had lunch. And then the next day, or during lunch, he was like, do you want to do a talk on my channel tomorrow? Mm. And so we decided that it would be cool if I helped somebody from his channel. And I actually had a few people that I wanted to help because I had watched a few of his videos. I don't know if you know who Ronnie is. Mm-hmm. She was like a young girl that her story is just very heartbreaking. But there was a few like men and women that just seemed like they really wanted the help and they just didn't have any like proper guidance in their life. So I made Mark a little list of people and he said, why don't we let the public decide? So in my first interview, we basically just let, we told the viewers to vote for who they wanted in the comment section. And overwhelmingly, everybody was like, Amanda, 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 Amanda. So I was like, okay, who's Amanda? So then I look her up and...
how many interviews in was she at this point? Because didn't she do like...
She had a lot. She had a lot. There was a lot of material. I didn't even know it was the same woman when I saw.
Yeah, that was a crazy moment for me as well to realize like, oh, all those thumbnails.
Yeah, the same person. And so I actually called Mark and he's cut this out of our interview before because he wants me to seem like a saint when in actuality I called Mark and I said, can we pick someone else, not Amanda? And I told him, I was like, Amanda's really severe and I'm doing this for free. Like I'm not charging for my time and Amanda doesn't want the help. And
because she was about as far gone as you could get as an addict, yeah, basically, right?
Yeah. And like I said, I had a list of people that I wanted to help that I really felt emotionally connected to their stories. But number one, like Amanda was very far gone and she didn't want the help. And I knew that to get her to even start step one, I was going to have to start going to court and getting the courts involved.
Mm.
And Mark told me, he was like, well, you said that you could help anybody. And if you help Amanda, then you'll win people over.
Right.
So I told him, I was like, okay, fine, I'll do it. And I started, when I connected with Mark about it, like when I originally found out who Amanda was, Amanda was already in jail. She had attacked her father, and Mark instructed him to call the police, but they didn't really know what they were going to do
uh-huh.
from that point on. And when he told me that she was already in jail, I'm like, okay, I can go to court for her. But that's another thing. A lot of people are saying when Amanda was not well in those previous interviews, she had made a statement that's
about
like
her dad.
No.
Oh.
Well, yes, but like she made a statement, and the statement is, I don't want no girl my age video gaming me.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And that apparently to the internet is evidence that I was following her around on Skid Row with a VR headset, trying to get her to do virtual reality.
So what were you actually doing?
I didn't know her at that time.
Oh, you didn't even
know
her.
Yeah. I didn't even know her at that time. Because when I met her, she was in jail.
Right.
She was in jail and all of her teeth were missing and her jaw was dislocated and her face was like a balloon. Like she was super, super skinny.
Right.
It was really, really sad. Like, I couldn't understand what she was saying when she would talk to me. I thought she had permanent brain damage and I wasn't sure how far I would get with Amanda.
And this is who you're supposed to help rehabilitate.
Yes, yeah. And so, you know, the other thing that I'm canceled for is I made a statement, conservatorship or jail. And basically these people are saying the only way that I advocate to help people is if you have somebody that needs help, you either, you know, set them up to go to jail or you put them in a conservatorship, you know? And so I was actually talking in terms of Amanda's case, you know, number one, I don't believe in ever setting anyone up, but I definitely don't believe in enabling somebody. If someone attacks you, if someone does something to you, then you definitely should call the police, because even though it seems like a betrayal to that person, if that person comes and attacks someone else, right, and that someone is not willing to like petition for treatment for them, they actually want justice for them to go to jail, then they're in trouble. But if they attack you and you're saying to the judge, hey, I know that, you know, I just want them to get help, I'm willing to do this and this and this. And so the amazing thing that I was trying to show with Amanda is anyone can do what I can do. I'm uh-huh. not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm literally just using community resources that exist, and I'm telling everybody how to do it.
Right.
And so what I was advocating for was something in California called an LPS conservatorship. And that's a conservatorship of mental health. It's equivalent to to a guardianship. It doesn't take control of the estate. Not that Amanda had anything for me to like control, but in terms of property, she didn't have any property. But an LPS conservatorship is only for mental health. They only run for 1 year, and then you have to renew them, and the court needs to find additional evidence. So it's like the equivalent to conservatorship or a guardianship.
Mm-hmm.
And so from there, I had prepared all of the paperwork to show that this is a mental health case. It's not a criminal case. Amanda's father would come with me to court. And he was essentially, you know, saying the same thing, like, yeah, she attacked me, but I don't want her to go to jail. I want her to get help. And we had found a treatment center that was willing to accept her. But because the damage to her brain was so severe and I wasn't sure how capable she was of understanding the severity of the situation. I was trying to explain to Amanda, if you run away from treatment, you're going to go back to jail. So we delayed the, so she was in jail for 2 months, and I could have had her out a couple weeks sooner, but she stayed in jail, and I was calling her all the time saying, hey, just remember, you're gonna come back here if you run away from the treatment center. And then once we got her into the treatment center, you know, it was a really sad situation. The other thing that people are upset about is that Amanda gained weight, you know.
Why would they be upset about that?
They're saying Amanda gained weight under Lima's care. She was really skinny, and Lima made her fat, and that's why she died.
And usually if you see somebody who's all fucked up on drugs and they gain weight, it's because they get off drugs, right?
Well, number one, she was on medications from treatment.
Okay.
Right? I mean, like, she's prescribed her medications from her doctors. That's a separate situation.
Uh-huh.
But, like, I'm not a doctor, so I can't say what gains weight or what doesn't. But in general, some medications have that effect to, like, put on weight. But that was not Amanda's issue. Amanda was the same weight that she was before she was using drugs.
I'm going to be real with you. I think her weight was the least of her problems. Like, why the fuck would anybody be focusing on that? Like, clearly her life was, like, hanging by a thread at that point. Like, focusing on her weight seems kind of...
Well, the public sentiment towards me is you should have left Amanda alone. And Mark and Larry would have said the complete opposite, because myself, Mark, and Larry were the only people in her life that were actually trying to help her and actually... sorry. Like, I had to dress her for her funeral, you know?
Wow.
And, like, these attacks started, we didn't even have a year to grieve her passing. And I had, a very close relationship with her because she didn't have any other family aside from her father.
Right.
I was talking to her every single day. I spoke to her right before she passed away. Like, she had called me, and we were talking about, you know, moving her, like, I was asking her, like, you know, what she wants to do, because she had started school. So I had gotten her a laptop, and she wanted to be a certified nursing assistant. So we got her the book to start studying. We were enrolling her in online classes.
And how long was she clean for at this point?
At this point, she was clean for about, I can't remember the exact number, but roughly 250 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
She was clean for that long.
Yeah.
And then she relapsed, and that's when she passed away.
She did not relapse. She passed away in the facility, not a facility I own because I do not own a rehab, but she passed away a few days before she was supposed to step down to a lower level of care, which is basically living in a sober living or living on campus or living somewhere and then going to a program 5 days a week.
Right.
And so
what happened?
That's the big question. She passed away in her sleep. I had gotten a phone call from Larry, and he was, like, hysterical, crying. And it was Mother's Day, and my husband and I were visiting his mom in Chicago when I got the phone call. So we were having, like, brunch with his mom. And I got this call with Larry just calling me, and I couldn't understand what he was saying. And then, like, I made out what he was saying is, Amanda's dead, Amanda's dead. And I'm like, Larry, that's... what are you talking about? Like, I didn't even take it seriously. And he was like, they called me and they told me Amanda died. And I told him, I'm like, Larry, that's impossible. I just spoke to her. Like, there's no way. Sorry.
No.
So I was calling the facility, calling. No one would call me back. And then the CEO called me and said, hey, Lima, I'm really sorry, but Amanda passed away. And we, That team loved Amanda. You know, she was there for quite some time, and she had watched the videos of herself later on, like not at the beginning of when she was at the treatment center, and the staff told Amanda not to show the videos to anyone because they didn't want other patients to judge her for like her past.
Mm.
And Amanda didn't care. She was like, there was a girl that was trying to leave a treatment center, like discharge against medical advice, so leave early. And her parents told her that if you finish treatment, we're gonna buy you a car. And Amanda was in such shock that this girl was gonna leave the treatment center and go relapse, and that her parents were willing to buy her a car. And she was like, look at these videos of me. Like, do you want to end up like me? And she ended up pulling this girl to the side. And she was like, do you realize like how lucky you are that your parents are going to like take care of you and do all this stuff for you? And, you know, and so she would often like show those videos to people, to, like convince them to stay in treatment. And, anyways, so she just became like a part of the family at that facility. All of the staff knew her. They all loved her very much. She had like her chair and group, which when she passed away, they put flowers on the chair she used to sit on, the other patients.
Right.
And then another girl came and moved the flowers and sat down, and like a fight broke out in the middle of group therapy.
Oh,
because
wow.
It was Amanda's chair. So like there was a lot of people that really loved and cared about her. And, you know, that was, so when I had spoken to the medical staff and asked them, they told me that, you know, aside from her medications, Amanda only had Tylenol in her system. Fast forward, it was aspirin, not Tylenol, because they which to me is not such a big deal of me announcing Tylenol versus aspirin.
I mean, they're very similar, right? I've pretty much taken them interchangeably whole life.
But they're not the reason. None of that is the reason that she passed away. And so, like, when she passed, coroner took months to get back to us and kept coming back with, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And then Mark and all these, you know, people like donors and everyone would be hitting me up and saying, why did Amanda pass away? Why did it, like, what's going on? Don't you think it's weird that you don't have an answer yet? And so then, we sent, my colleague sent an email to the coroner, cause I didn't want to be the one interacting with the coroner directly. Cause I had felt that I was, backtracking when I first got Amanda into treatment. How unfiltered do you want me to be on this podcast?
Real unfiltered. What? Okay. Throw a turd at you or something?
No. When I first got Amanda into treatment, I ended up, so it was a really bad time in my life. So I had like no money for my company. I didn't know how I was going to make payroll, right? This is like end of 2020, like roughly October. So I didn't know how I was going to make payroll. I was having issues with my sisters. Like, they were just doing really, really poorly. And they kept ending up in the hospital or near dead or whatever the case was. I had an incident where, the facility that Amanda was at in California was $40,000 a month. And the woman kept texting me, like, when am I going to get paid? When am I going to get paid? And I told her, you know, that we would pay her that month. And so I went on Mark's channel and I announced that we're going to help Amanda. And so I was expecting, because there was such an overwhelming amount of people that were asking for that, that we were going to get a lot of support and we were going to be able to pay for her treatment. And so I ended up raising $1,500
off this GoFundMe that you announced on Mark's channel.
Yes, and it was attached. So I started a scholarship program, and the money all went to giving.org. It's a fiscal sponsor. It's a nonprofit. They collect the money and they manage it so that it never touches my hands or Mark's hands. And I felt that that was the most transparent way of doing it.
Uh-huh.
So when we say it's going to pay for medical expenses, Giving, we submit the receipts to Giving, and then Giving pays the medical facilities. And so this lady's texting me. She's like, why I need to get paid or I'm releasing Amanda. And then on top of that, the backlash that I had gotten when I announced I was helping Amanda was, Amanda's black and this lady's white and this lady's trying to take advantage of the Black Lives Matter movement and whatever. Like, it was a shock, okay?
The fact that she's black seems very unimportant in comparison to the fact that she was blatantly addicted to drugs and was spiraling out of control, right?
It was a shock.
I mean, it was just so crazy. Shock.
And if you look at that interview, like, it was an overwhelming amount of negativity pouring in, basically about white entitlement.
Right. Like, I would think so much more of the average software underbelly viewer, to be honest. Like, I would just think that they were, like, largely a community of people that were, like, pretty reasonable. And then I hear something like that. And really, like, I was just reading the comments on your new interview on Software Underbelly, trying to get, like, a grasp of what the main complaints are.
Yeah.
And I mean, well, I didn't really see the Illuminati thing so much, but I don't really see, like, real arguments. I just see, like, she seems like a liar. Like, some people just seem to be convinced by your mannerisms, I guess, maybe that.
I uploaded a video today that got not the best response. I mean, I haven't checked on it since I uploaded it, but I titled it, I looked up T-Channel to see, like, what they title their videos, and I titled it, Lima from Aura is in Big Trouble. And it's basically me reacting to some of the ridiculous things that people are saying, like, Lima's not my real name. And
right. You know, Lima is a country.
Basically.
Right. Would you, Lima is a bean, some people would say.
Some people, you know what? Okay. Some people will, like, be mean to me in the comments and be like, go kill yourself, Lima Bean. But, like, my best friend in high school, her name was Ashley. Mm-hmm. I can't find her. I don't think she has a Facebook. So if she's out there, contact me. But
any Ashley's watching this, tap
any Ashley's. She used to call me Lima Bean when we were in high school. It was just a cute name she had for me. So that doesn't offend me. It just reminds me of Ashley.
Right.
But I just think that's funny because no one that actually likes me calls me that in the comments.
Mm. But okay, my thing about it is like, and when I was watching, like, okay, would you say there's, like, a ringleader of this? Or is it kind of, right?
Yeah, so all of this really started, well, the first wave was just totally random. It was random people saying that I was racist because Amanda was black. But if I was helping a white person, they would say I'm racist because I'm not helping a black person.
that is a good point, yeah.
There's no way I could win that. And so I'm getting text messages constantly from, you know, this lady that owns a treatment center in California saying, we're releasing Amanda, we're releasing Amanda. Well, if they release Amanda, then she violates her court order and then she's going to get arrested when they find her and she's going to end up doing time. And then I will be known, my reputation, as the white woman that put a black woman in jail when I'm trying to say, this is how you help someone.
Because you didn't have $40,000 a month.
Yeah. Right. And I couldn't raise the money. Like, it was only $1,500 that we had raised.
I think we really got to call out Mark for all this because he set you up with the impossible task of, like, I'm not going to say impossible, but let's be real. It's like if you took 1,000 addicts and put them in a room, it seems like Amanda might honestly be the worst one. Like, she was like, it was really, really bad to expect that you would have been able to write the ship that she was sailing at that time.
Well, I did tell Mark I could help anybody, and I was extremely confident. And by the way, Amanda is not the worst case that I've dealt with.
Right.
I've dealt with people similar to Amanda, but for me, if I didn't think I could help Amanda, why would I put myself in front of millions of viewers and say, okay, I'll take this case on?
Do you think you're a little idealistic?
No, because I did help her.
But it seems like kind of a common thread because when you talk about you telling the Shark Tank investors about your nonprofit, that it feels like maybe you have at times thought that maybe you're a little overconfident in what you could bring to the table.
Oh, definitely.
You have a streak of that.
When I first went on Mark's channel, I was very idealistic.
Right.
And when this woman was threatening to release Amanda, I didn't have money to make payroll for my company, for my team. And then on top of that, my sisters were just getting worse and I couldn't help them. And when people are like, why can't you help your sisters? Well, helping my sisters would cost $45,000 a month times two, $90,000 a month, and I can't afford to pay it. But if I can demonstrate with someone, like I thought if the audience picks somebody and helps to pay for their medical bills, then we could, and I use the word case study, and people are like, oh, Lima's experimenting on Amanda. And if you actually watch the video in its entirety, because these people are not watching my videos, they're watching conspiracy theories clipped together with To Catch a Predator music right in the background.
Because, okay, there is a ringleader. I'm not sure if you want to name them or whatever, because maybe that would, I mean, I'm sure anyone who wants to find it can find it. But it's so not serious in the way that it's being reported. Like when they're putting this stuff together about you, and I'm gonna give you one example, and I kind of call it like Shane Dawson style editing, because I used to watch Shane Dawson, and he would do this thing with editing where he like walks into a room and it's like Jeffree Star has all these fucking Gucci purses, and he's just like oh, and he acts so shocked, and like the music is like shocking, and like he just does so much to make it seem like he's looking at something shocking when in reality it's like. It's a bunch of fucking handbags or whatever. It's like, Shane, you're a fucking millionaire. You're looking at a bunch of $20,000 bags. It's not like there's no reason for you to be reacting like this, but he does it to hype up the video. Yeah. And I'm watching the video about you, and there's one point where they're showing footage from her funeral, and you're going, you're talking, and you name Oro. You name the charity.
Yeah.
And she stops it, and she goes, I am shaking. Did she really just name her charity? I am shaking. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's not like that is not something that should be so shocking. Like it would seem kind of, I would agree that like, you know, you over promoting it or like being really crass about it, of course, could be kind of weird. But like the clip that she showed was not shocking or weird in any way.
Yeah, it was
but this
me
is,
renaming,
that's like her whole video.
It was me renaming the scholarship. That was my goodbye speech to Amanda. It was basically me saying I'm renaming the scholarship to Amanda's Light Scholarship. So any funds that we raise are going to be in Amanda's name to help somebody.
Right.
Basically as like her legacy, because she was very important to me and I was very close to her. And
I just think it takes a lot of like mental gymnastics to be able to frame that as negative.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
And like these are people that are not watching everything. They're not watching the full videos to their entirety, and they're omitting a lot of interviews. Like when they say her father abused her,
she took that back at one point.
She omitted that, and she was mortified. You don't understand how many conversations she had with me. Lima, can we film with Mark? Lima, can we film with Mark? I'm like, I lived in a different state, so I would go visit Amanda.
Right.
I wasn't treating her. I was not her doctor. But I never took pictures, like very rarely took pictures to like update the donors and stuff. But I spent a lot of time with her, and she kept saying, can we do an interview? Can we do an interview? Because she wanted to take back what she said. And I kept telling her, don't focus on that. Focus on your recovery. So if you look at how many photos I took with Amanda, it was very rare, because I didn't want to like be talking to her about something and then pull up a picture and like, let's take a selfie, you know? Mm-hmm. So they're omitting the fact that she had taken it back. And also when Mark reached out to Larry, he had reached out to Larry because at that point he already knew that what she was saying was not true, because she would say everybody's a molester. Like she would literally accuse random strangers she's never met before. She'd point them out and say that person's a molester, according to Mark, you know, she would. And then at that point he realized, and she also stated that her mom died in a fire in the same interview that she called her father an abuser.
Right.
She said, my mom died in a fire, and her mom is very much alive. I met her mom. So, it's absolutely not the case, you know? But like, why would that be a lie? But that is the truth. And she's also in that same interview calling her father a molester and her mom is dead. She's also saying that the government is following her. And she's also saying that someone's video gaming her. Right. And then she's saying that there are clones of her. And people are saying that I was video gaming her and that the clones of her are clones of her in virtual reality that I cloned. And you guys should watch Amanda and listen to her because she was trying to tell us something about Lima, but we all thought she was crazy. And that's in my Lima is in Big Trouble video.
Who are these people? Like, it just feels like the most bizarre. It feels like coming up with conspiracy theories has just been like so normalized that this just seems like a normal use of these people's time. It's kind of mind-blowing to me.
It's very, but if you also think about it, with COVID, everyone was just like Netflix and chilling.
Yeah.
And then you have like, you know, the Tinder swindler,
right,
and like the someone killed my roommate, or my roommate's a serial killer, whatever these like shows are that are like true crime or whatever. And people just have gotten addicted to it. And I think, you know, people have become very cynical and they're just searching to make, you know, these stories up. And
but I see it in rap all the time where if there's any level of ambiguity about how somebody lost their life, like, unless, like, there won't be weird conspiracies if the person got shot in the head in the middle of downtown and there's photos of their body laid out. But if there's any kind of mystery about what happened, the people just latch onto it and just come up with these crazy ass theories. It's just become so normalized. And like, you know, I went into this interview wanting to be objective and to kind of like, you know, really push you on like, are you really the devil or whatever? But
I thought you were going to be really mean to me.
But I just
that's
really,
why I showed up in a no jumper shirt.
I know. And that is a very interesting tactic. I'm not sure I've ever had anybody do that before, but respect. I just really have like struggled to find any kind of thread that seemed valid about you having ill intentions for Amanda.
And that's the really sad part is, I went into debt to help Amanda. It took a lot of my time, a lot of my life. And, this all started out of another conspiracy that they had created. But like just backtracking to when that woman was threatening to release Amanda. So, she's telling me I'm going to release Amanda. I can't pay payroll. I cannot, like my sisters, I can't help them and they're getting worse and worse. And I only raised $1,500 to help Amanda and this woman's threatening to release her. I was helping someone and this person cracks a glass and cuts herself and she cuts me with the glass. And she had let a homeless man inject her with heroin before that. So this was like my husband gets upset because he's like, you're always in like these risky situations trying to help people. But anyways,
I was kind of thinking too. I was thinking these are the situations you end up in when you're like very, very empathetic and like are willing to take on these sort of projects. Because like I lived and had a bike shop downtown for a couple of years. And I learned pretty quickly that in terms of my interaction with the homeless and the drug addicts and stuff, that I was going to, you know, hey, how you doing? But I'm not giving anybody any money because they're going to keep asking you for fucking money. And I'm not going to like reach out to try to help somebody like that. Like a huge percentage of people down there are just kind of like, they're probably going to be there forever. Yeah. Let's be real. Like,
I mean, I never give money to people. What I do is I'll make like little bags with blankets and food and I'll put a card in there with hotlines that they can call to get help.
You got a big heart.
I would not want somebody giving my sister money because I know that money could end up causing an overdose and killing her.
Right. And you live downtown, you see it and you know. It's like, well, I know you're not going to fucking buy a piece of pizza. I know what you're doing with this.
Yeah. And like, you know, at the end of the day, it's just so common that the point is like, we need to start helping these people instead of just like enabling them. And that's the one thing that I'm like completely anti enabling people to harm themselves. And I guess that's what's like polarized people with me so because they're very like the people that are against me are very liberal. Like you should be allowed to do anything. You know, it's like, I'm sorry, but I don't want my sister doing anything to the point of where I'm at her funeral. Like I want, I want her to get help even if she doesn't want the help. These and eventually she's going to be grateful.
I mean, like the idea, like, yes, you can do whatever the fuck you want. And obviously, you know, Amanda exercised that till the end. But I mean, the idea that it's wrong for you to want to help somebody or wrong to push them, like it starts with this overall belief that there's nothing, that nothing is real and that there's no objective good life and that everything that everybody goes through is just kind of up in the air. And then it ends with the idea that you're wrong for trying to help somebody. It's just fucking
madness.
Well,
it's also like, why would Lima want to help? Obviously, there's an angle. And that's the thing that the internet cannot understand. And if you want to know why I would help, just read the petition. You know, like, it's literally laid out so that insurance companies pay for my sister's treatment. So that somebody, like, enough people care. Because one person alone, I can't get a meeting with an insurance company. But if 100,000, a million people sign a petition saying, listen up, United, Kaiser, all of you guys, like, you need to start treating mental health like physical health. And there are ways to measure if someone's getting better or worse.
Right.
You know? And so it's been like completely crazy. But in terms of like when Amanda was at the first facility in California and the lady was trying to get her, telling me that she's gonna, you know, release her. And I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna be known as the white woman that put a black woman in jail. Cause that's literally what the internet is trying to say. You know, I'm racist for helping Amanda. So
I'm gonna give you some life advice.
Yeah.
Don't ever spend a moment of your life trying to make woke people happy because by definition, they are permanently unhappy.
Well, this was my very first experience of that because I thought I was gonna go on Mark's channel and be like, we're gonna help somebody, and everyone's gonna be like, let's do it, and then who do you guys want to help, and then they're gonna be like, Amanda, and then, you know, here's the money to pay for Amanda's treatment. And I wouldn't, like, after that I'm just, you know, going and visiting her and giving fun little updates, but that wasn't what happened. So on top of all of like the other chaos, I got cut with this glass from this random girl. I have all of these drama with my business and everything else. And then this woman's threatening to release Amanda, which would, you know, go against her court order. So I made a rash decision without talking to my husband to take a very large loan out to pay for Amanda's treatment. And I ended up sending the funds to the woman so that she doesn't release Amanda. And then I worked it out with a facility in Las Vegas to transfer her over there because they were willing to work with me on the payment since she was going to be there for a very, like, a pretty long time, not just 30 days. And so I went to court in California, requested that she be moved to that other facility, gave them the address. They approved it. I have all the paperwork. And then Amanda was taken, not by me, but through like the facilities and the court orchestrated, not me, to this facility in Las Vegas. And so I ended up in debt with the situation. And but I knew that when people saw that I was actually helping Amanda, that they would that it would start raising money and I would be able to pay the loan back. And my husband found out that I took this loan on top of all the other drama I was going with, debt in my company and all this other stuff. So we were arguing the entire time, and I had this massive loan, and I felt like the entire internet hated me. But I, you know, like, I just knew that I was gonna be able to, I mean, I ruined Thanksgiving that year. Things were just so shocking to me that I just decided to give up, and I've never had a suicidal moment in my life, but I was like, I'm just gonna kill myself.
Really?
I've never said this, like, only a couple of my friends know, but so it was Thanksgiving 2020, and you know, my husband and I were fighting about money. I felt like I lost my sisters. I didn't know how I was gonna maintain Amanda in treatment. Everything was just falling apart. I was like, I can't make payroll. I don't know how to tell my team. And so I took a lift to a bridge in downtown Chicago, and I left without my jacket, and I told my husband, he was trying to give me my jacket, and we were arguing the whole time, and I was like, I don't need it where I'm going. And he called the police because he kind of understood what I meant. And obviously his whole family's there. Super embarrassing. And then I got to the bridge and I realized...
The Lyft driver's family was there?
No. My husband's whole family was there for Thanksgiving.
Right.
So we got married in 2019.
Uh-huh.
And this was like my Thanksgiving with his family as us being married. And this is like the introduction. And so I took a Lyft from the house because we were arguing. Plus, like, all the other stress I had. I'm like, to the bridge in Chicago. And I'm like, I'm just going to kill myself. So I get to the bridge and it's so low. And I'm like, if I jump off this thing, I'm going to survive. And then we're going to have helicopters. And then everyone's going to be like, mental health founder. I'll probably end up on the No Jumper Instagram account.
Yeah.
Mental health founder, CEO jumps off the bridge, you know.
That's cool that you're so tapped in that you perceived the meme before it happened. Yeah.
I was like, no one will ever trust me to like do anything ever again. No investor will ever, you know, back me.
Probably not. Suicide attempts got to
no
be
way.
Bad.
No, it would ruin everything. And so
confidence.
I ended up going back. I called my husband and he came to get me and I went back and I remember staying in the room for 3 days. I didn't want to face his family because I was so embarrassed. It was awful. Like, anyways. So that was when I ruined Thanksgiving in 2020.
The way I see it, my honest opinion,
yeah.
is that you seem like a lot of the people in these conversations, they think that you're a really selfish, terrible person who's pretending to be empathetic. I see you as somebody who seems like you're like empathetic to a fault, in the sense that I think that you really need to rein it in. Like you know, like that situation you're describing, it just seemed like you just took on way too much by just being kind of idealistic. Like, I really think they have the wrong idea about you. And I wonder where that comes from. I feel like a lot of people, they see a person doing something virtuous or, you know, taking on a virtuous, you know, mission and they like just, maybe that like kind of makes them feel bad about themselves because the average person just is not doing anything like this, and like, and then they look at your failures and like, to them this is proof that you were all bad the whole time. And it's like, well, I mean, if you try stuff, you're gonna fail, you know?
So it's at the end of the day, like, I've dedicated my life to building something, and then you have people that have dedicated their lives to destroying what I've built. And that's the most shocking thing of everything.
For like a couple hundred thousand YouTube views, which is so crazy, because it's like, I mean, just such a small reward. It makes me feel like everything is fucking Alex Jones now.
My Instagram account was shut down for like a month and a half because they mass reported me for child pornography.
Jesus.
So
that's a whole nother thing. Instagram's fucked.
It was shut down. And then I was locked out of my Facebook. They've mass reported my YouTube channel, like, you know, and before I wasn't very active. Like, I've probably on average posted on YouTube 3 times a year. Like, I'm going to start being more active now because I want to take back the narrative of my story online.
Right.
But, fast forward when Amanda does her final interview with Mark. It's phenomenal. Everyone's so shocked at how much better she's doing. The GoFundMe goes from 1,500 to 37,000. Mm. And so I'm like, oh, great. We're going to keep doing interviews and showing her progress, showing her going back to school.
And you felt like this is going to kind of save your whole shit, right?
So essentially I pay up front, and then when giving pays the treatment center, then the treatment center will reimburse me. That was the original deal.
Right.
And then I'll use that money to pay back the loan.
Mm-hmm.
So I never actually would get access to donor funds. And then Amanda passes away, and there was like, all I got was like an outpour of support, like people telling me, I'm so sorry for your loss. Thank you for everything that you did for Amanda. And then at that time, prior to that, I was reaching out to people, because I've worked with like quite a few public figures and help privately with their mental health. So I was reaching out to people and asking if anyone would share Amanda's GoFundMe to help me raise money so I could pay back this loan. And one of my friends, well, a couple of my friends have mutual friends, like me and Bam Margera got connected.
All right. Yeah.
And so we were talking on the phone or FaceTiming and this and that. And I was talking to his wife, and we were going to do a social media collaboration. And so the agreement was that I was going to give him a shout out on Mark's channel and on my Instagram and say, like, thanks so much for supporting me. Like, go follow Bam and Nikki. And then Bam and Nikki were supposed to get together with me and film. Like, I was showing Bam, like, how our technology works and Nikki. And then they're supposed to put that interview on Bam's Instagram and share Amanda's GoFundMe in, like, his bio. And right. So we were doing an Instagram collaboration.
Uh-huh.
I went to do the... So, like, I was living in Washington at the time. I flew out to L.A., filmed with Mark, posted on my Instagram, went out to San Diego, went to film with Nikki and Bam, and it wasn't the type of footage that I was comfortable using because it would have just been very exploitive to their family. And I, from that, I could tell he wasn't well, and I wasn't following him on Instagram.
And when was this?
This was a couple months before Amanda died.
Because, okay.
So this was the beginning of 2021.
Okay, because, okay, the thing with Bam is that he just recently did, like, Steve-O's podcast, yeah. And he's sort of, like, proclaiming victory over his addiction and everything, and then it just came out of TMZ, like, a day or two ago that he's, like, fully off the wagon. They got footage of him partying and all this stuff, so... He wasn't sober at that time because they said he was in a sober living house or some shit for like a year plus.
Yeah. So like the thing with Bam is like this whole free Bam situation. I don't know how familiar you are with it.
Another lunatic online really, movement. Isn't that shit
the same,
crazy?
The same woman that started this.
Really?
Lima killed Amanda. So she wow. said that the post, me saying, thank you, Bam, for supporting me. Was that Bam invested in my company, and then I put him in a conservatorship to take the rest of his money.
Right.
And he was never under a conservatorship. And, you know, I'm, like I said, I have a lot of mutual friends. I'm friends with the parents. Like, we run in the same circles. So when Amanda had, so, like, when we did that, like, Instagram collab that I never used,
mm-hmm.
I didn't talk to them for a little bit, and then I started getting phone calls like, hey, can you help? Can you help with Bam? Can you help with Bam? And, you know, that's like his story to tell. The way that he tells it is pretty funny. But essentially, like, I kept saying, like, no, I'll tell you guys what to do, but I won't get involved. I'll tell you guys what to do, but I won't get involved, because Amanda had just passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that I was stuck in this debt. I promised Ivan that I was not going to get involved with any more stuff like this, because not only am I running a startup and spending 1,000 hours a day running a business, but I'm also dealing with like crisis calls and situations. And I told him I'm going to focus on our family, and I promised him that. And then things just escalated with Bam's situation, where, again, like, I'll let him tell the story, but nobody wanted to be his legal guardian because that would require you saying no to him.
Right.
And I was basically just a human shield. So it nothing about being the guardian was advantageous to me. It was just I get to be the person that Bam hates when I say no. Like, that's not a good idea.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's what a lot of celebrities need, is just somebody yeah. to say no, because they go out of their way to surround themselves yeah. with enablers. I was just, when I was talking to Steve-O, he was saying that free Bam movement was like totally counterproductive, that it was totally insane.
It's ruined a lot of things. Like, Bam was originally under a 1-year court order treatment, and then the free Bam movement just like escalated things. And people keep telling him, like, imagine this, right? You go to a treatment center, and so, like, at the very beginning, Bam and I are fighting all the time, just like when Amanda didn't like me at the beginning because she wanted to go out and do drugs. Like, right. She didn't want to be in treatment. And so fast forward, like, I would tell Bam all the time, I'm like, you can, you know, you can hate me all you want right now, but eventually we're going to be best friends. And now, like, he always jokes around with me, like, oh, you've moved up. You're best friend number 10,000. Mm. I'd be like, okay, well, if I need something from you, how are you going to find me in between 10,000 people, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, for him, he goes to a treatment center and he's being told by random patients, like, oh, did you know that Lima is stealing your money? Oh my God, did you know that the courts are rigged? The doctors are tricking you? You don't need treatment. What do you need treatment for? Like, and then I have to get on the phone with him and be like, look, you need to do this for your son. Like, you need to get your family back. Do you know what I mean? Like, you need to do this for your health. So in a private case with a private person, the courts, the doctors, the everybody is saying the same thing. The family, they're all saying, like, we want you to get better. We want you to get help. In Bam's situation, he has all of these people trying to save him from me, and they're trying to hurt me by causing him to relapse and sabotage himself. And that doesn't hurt me. It just, of course, like, it. I'm sad for him, but it hurts him. Like, it hurts him, and his son's going to turn 5, and he's going to get to a point where he's going to realize his dad's not there. And, you know, his relationship with Nikki is shaky because, like, they need to work things out, and he needs to take his recovery seriously, and he's trying his best. Like, he really, really is. He really, it's just a really sad situation with all of the confusion that's going on. And, like, I feel for Nikki, and I feel for Bam, and I feel for his parents, and it's sad.
It's crazy because when I was watching him on Steve-O's podcast, he's talking about his addiction as if it's like, it's over. Like, I'm good now. I realized I just can't drink. And Steve-O is kind of like, Steve-O is somebody who I think has the right attitude on his addiction, where he is actually terrified of relapsing, and he lives his life as if he's fucking, he wants to avoid things that are going to tempt him. He wants to avoid potential triggers and stuff. When he walked into our studio and his manager smells weed right away, and he kind of like just pulls us aside right away. He's like, we don't want anybody smoking weed around him, yada, yada. You know, it's like he really like goes out of his way, and he acknowledges that he has this beast inside of him. And with Bam, it was just like immediately trying to act like it was like nothing, and that this was just a thing in the past. I'm like, bro, you haven't even been sober for that long.
You have to understand that, like, Bam's getting mixed signals because he's not really getting to do like straight up therapy and get all the information from everyone, because he has like so many yes people around him, which are just like fans and other patients that are like telling him, you don't need to do this. You're not, you don't have a problem. Oh my God, you're Bam. You're like a skateboard champion and a celebrity and whatever, like, you know, and it's just like, and this is unrelated to Bam, but just in general, when you have somebody that's been put in on a pedestal, like a celebrity, there's another layer, because you get all this validation from people, and then you become addicted to the validation that you get, like the attention and people coming up to you as fans. And it's like, you know, people just need to be more respectful about the fact that you're talking about somebody's health, you're talking about somebody's family, and you're talking about things that you don't know, because there's a lot of things that these people don't know. The guardianship was separate from the court order. It's none of anybody's business why the court order happened. It's up to Bam to share that stuff. But at the end of the day, it's like another level of enabling for him, you know, just like the public saying, like, you don't need to get help. You don't, like, everybody's tricking you. There's a giant conspiracy. Oh, here's something. That woman posted videos of April talking to the police about an incident that happened where she was, I can't remember exactly, but, you know, those patients were showing him the videos and saying, don't trust your parents, this and that. And it's like April literally showing genuine concern for her son and being really emotional. And it's, again, nobody knows what happened in that situation. Mm-hmm. And they're literally taking police body cam footage and blasting it out and making a conspiracy or like a story behind it.
It's really sick.
It's very sick, and it's really sad to watch a family get torn apart. And people watched Phil and April on, you know, Jackass. Like, they've grown up with them, so maybe they feel like entitled to just being a part of the process. But you know, you need to like treat these people like real human beings, and like, I don't know. It's like I've dealt with some really challenging cases, but in Bam's situation, his mental health and his like case is not as severe as some of the other people, like Amanda's situation. Mm-hmm. But the toxic thing is like the Free Bam movement and this cult following of people that's like determined to get their way. And they have no insight. They don't have any medical records of his. They don't have any insight.
And the, what is the end result? Is that like somebody is making a living off YouTube as a result of just making these bullshit fucking videos? It's really crazy, man. Like, learning about all this has maybe decreased my confidence in humanity overall, I would say.
Me too.
Certainly in the Soft White Underbelly audience.
Me too.
Damn.
I mean, it's The only evidence that anyone would have to say that like Lima's an awful person is the autopsy report, because I essentially stated in Mark's video that I'm going to read exactly what the doctor gave me, and I read seizure disorder.
Right.
And this woman got the autopsy report and was like, look, Amanda died of cardiac arrhythmia related to schizophrenia. And so they're like, Lima lied about the autopsy. And this is the funniest thing for me. If Amanda died of something related to schizophrenia, wouldn't that be good for me in a sense? So I could say we should treat mental health like physical health. And then she dies of something related to mental health. So I'd be like, going around blasting that and be like, look, she died of something related to schizophrenia. But none of these people making their conspiracy videos have what I actually read. Mark wouldn't just let me read something random.
Right.
Like, I forwarded Mark the email from the doctor. I was like, great, this is what I'm going to read on your channel. Literally, the email is straight from the doctor. I have zero reason. It doesn't affect me what Amanda passed away from, because I wasn't physically there. And, you know, in terms of the autopsy report that she's reading, it's missing a bunch of information, which she wouldn't know because she doesn't have all of Amanda's medical records. And it says that there's no evidence of traumatic brain injury. And anyone that knew Amanda or anyone that watched the videos knew that she was violently raped and beaten on several occasions, where she lost most of her teeth. Her jaw was dislocated. She had a lot of brain trauma. She could barely talk when I met her. Like, and the first facility that she went to said that because Amanda had previously only been in facilities for like a couple days and then released, so she'd get in there high. She'd be talking to herself and they'd be like, oh, schizophrenic. And so once she was in a facility for a longer period of time, they reached out and said, like, Amanda doesn't have schizophrenia. That was drug induced.
Right.
And so when I got, like, when our team saw the report, like, it's like a shock to me that they didn't. So I guess they didn't have the medical records. The coroner that performed the autopsy did not have the medical records from the facility in which she passed away from.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't say that in Mark's video because I'm not trying to throw blame around. But I, too, would like a proper death investigation to be done by Clark County. And I would like Clark County to release an official statement. I've had my attorneys reach out to them and, you know, I also want answers. And the woman that started the Bam Margera conspiracy theory of me being a conservator, which is not true, or the fact that I hurt Amanda, like a real journalist would get the Clark County report, attempt to reach out to me and say, hey, I have this. Why did you lie about it? And then I would have reached back out to her and said, hey, I didn't lie about it, forwarded her the email that I got. And I'm like, great finding. Let's reach out to them together and figure this out.
Right.
You know,
I mean,
that's how it should have worked. And we could have probably been really good friends, but she reached out. She made videos saying about how Lima's going to sue me and I'm going to draw this out so much and make sure that she runs out of money and blah, blah, blah. And I'm a lawyer and I'm going to represent myself.
Right. Because you are suing
her,
right?
Yeah. She hired. I requested a retraction and I gave her the actual facts of what she was saying.
Right.
And in that retraction demand letter, it said, well, my lawyers drafted it. It basically stated like she accused me of stealing the GoFundMe money. The $37,000. So I basically, the accusation was that I killed Amanda for $37,000, which would be impossible for me to get from Giving because they are a reputable nonprofit and Miley Cyrus uses them for her nonprofit. So it's not like they're just like a no name. They actually have a lot of credibility. But I corrected her and my lawyers sent her the demand letter stating that I actually took out this much of a loan and this is how I'm in debt this much from having to pay it back. I'm paying it back on my own. They corrected the fact that she said I was taking money from BAM and said that I actually never charged for my services. I helped the family out pro bono. The autopsy report is stated that I didn't lie about it. I actually read, what the doctor gave me. All of that and requested a retraction and she refused and put up a video. BAM's guardian threatens to sue me retraction video, right, where at the end of the video, she accuses me of taking an investment from BAM.
I don't know if I've ever seen anybody in my life who's seen more transparently like grifting for YouTube dollars than this person.
And then she opened up a personal GoFundMe and I've never had a personal GoFundMe. And raised $25,000 within the first 24 hours.
She did.
Yeah, her goal was 25, I think, and she raised it within a day.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
I don't understand.
And I couldn't even raise. I raised $1,500 over a month.
Right.
So, but yeah, that's what happens. You polarize people.
Right.
You get them to really hate something, and then you the Trump strategy.
Yeah.
You know,
it's pretty sick.
So
it's crazy. Okay, yeah. So I am going to look like a fool if you do end up being the devil, but okay, as far as my judgment on all this,
yeah,
I ain't buying it. You seem like a good person.
Thank you.
I understand why Mark continues to support you. I think that there's a stark raving, mad, lunatic mob on the internet that's out to basically terrorize innocent civilians for content, and I think that a lot of these women should be locked up because they're sick in the fucking head.
I really...
you don't have to be on board for the entirety of what I just said. But from what I could tell, this thing that we're discussing is like InfoWars for chicks.
I don't... Oh, this is just reputation destruction. Mean girl syndrome, high school drama. And it's... The sad thing is, now a bunch of people are making videos about me using this girl's videos as a source. And it's spreading like wildfire. Bad news spreads faster than good news. But at the same time, I can't remember what my point was. I had a really good point.
Yeah.
but yeah.
You know.
So... We're going to survive it.
Yeah, you're going to be all right. I mean, in reality, that person probably should not be allowed on YouTube anymore.
Oh, yeah, I remember what I was going to say. The people that are making all these videos about me, I feel like in real life, we could probably be really good friends. But they're just going about the wrong way of getting information. And if they can do this to me, then what else are they publishing on their YouTube channel that's not factual? And how are they harming other people? So... It was like a really rude awakening for me. And I really urge people to do their own investigation. And I I did file a complaint, like moving forward with a lawsuit against the woman that did this, because, you know, the internet's calling for an investigation. You cannot sue for defamation if you're wrong. Like, I won't win if there's truth behind her accusations, which means that the court has to investigate everything. Like, did I take money from BAM? Did I have anything to do with harming Amanda? Did I lie about the autopsy report? And calling me names like weird or awkward or whatever is not defamation. You guys can make fun of me or whatever, but calling me a criminal and a scam artist and a liar and a murderer and all of these things is defamation, and it's totally untrue, and I'm opening it up for the court to investigate. So I think that that's the best way to handle it. And again, you know, I'll let BAM speak on his experience with me, but I would also let Clark County clarify why I read what the doctor, you know, sent me, and why the report was not amended, and also why they came up with a death investigation, or why they came up with a cause of death without having all the facts or without having all the records. I'd like to have that answer. But
I'm with you.
Yeah. Hopefully this was entertaining.
Hopefully we, because you know what's funny about this too is that I saw a friend of mine. I was like not planning on doing the interview because I thought that it was too just deep in the soft white underbelly lore that I was just like, is this really like, this seems a little far away from the type of stuff I normally carry and cover. And then I saw a friend of mine, he goes, you got to interview the devil. And I'm like, who are you talking about? He's like, from Soft White Underbelly. And I'm like, oh, you watched that video? He's like, yeah. And he was like, he was pretty much like on board with what you're talking about. And so he might be kind of let down that I didn't end up buying it. But
I came prepared. Like, I did have a nervous breakdown in the car because I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I'm going to embarrass myself on Adam's podcast.
Yeah, but I think you did all right.
I thought that you were going to come at me like trying to make fun of me and
well, you know. Believe me, I was trying to find, like, I was trying to figure out what the case against you was, because, you know, it's like, if we're going to have a conversation, I need to be able to try to represent that case.
Yeah.
It didn't have any legs from what I could tell.
Yeah.
It seemed like almost all of it was pretty ridiculous. But anyway, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
For sure. Where should they go if they want to tap in with everything that you have going?
Well, my Instagram is Lima from Aura. My YouTube is also Lima from Aura. And my video of me reacting to some of the crazy things is called Lima from Aura is in Big Trouble. So I'm going to start addressing all of this in like little breakdowns on my YouTube channel. But my goal is to get experts to chime in and discuss these, not just me on my own, because obviously that hasn't been working out.
Don't give up on yourself.
Thank you.
I think you got a long way to go.
Thank you.
She's going up. Lima, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube, TikTok, Patreon, Instagram, etc. Like, comment, and subscribe. NoJumper.com if you want to support. Appreciate you guys.
Wait, one last thing.
Yep.
And also the merch, because Mark's channel has been like heavily demonetized.
Heard that.
We filmed our video 2 weeks ago, and when he uploaded it, it took 2 weeks to actually go up on his YouTube channel.
Really?
It was just like waiting there because they wouldn't approve it. So definitely, like, make sure you support the podcast by
that's true.
NoJumper.com.
Thank you. Also, Patreon.com/NoJumper. Appreciate you. Thank you. You reminded me to shout out some shit I didn't remember.
Thank you.
Thank you.